Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Comic-Con Stars. This is Dr. John. We're going to have a great show tonight already. I can tell from the way as excited everybody is that I've been talking to right here before the show. It's going to be a lot of fun. First of all, I wanted to thank Papa Stro Maestro for having me on last night for a short spot, and wanted to go over the couple of calendar events coming up. Papa Stro is going to be in Richmond on March the 4th with GXW Wrestling defending that U.S. Heavyweight Championship, and Comic-Con Stars will be there. And then, of course, March 12th is the world-famous, at least in Charlotte. No, the very world-famous Charlotte Comic-Con. Carolina Caricatures will be there, Comic-Con Stars and Papa Stro. So we're gonna have a great time up there. First of all, roll call. Alan Braswell, are you present and accounted for?
I'm here.
David Atwell, are you present and accounted for?
Very much so, sir. Good evening.
And my co-host, Papa Stro, how are you doing this evening?
Wonderful. Great to be here.
It is great to have you. You know what, everybody? It got cold tonight. Finally, it's like winter finally decided to come back and join us. But anyway, it's great. We got a wonderful cast, and we're going to have a lot of fun tonight. First of all, Papa Stro, it was great watching you this past weekend in Kinston. All I got, my one comment on Facebook to you was, it was old school rock and roll between you and the Barbarian. Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, you know, that was a great night of pro wrestling. It was great to catch up with some people that I haven't, like, you know, seen in quite some time. Got to catch up with Matt Hardy, which I've known the Hardy Boys for 8 years. You know, we pretty much started about the same time. And in the business, and, you know, being in the ring with the Barbarian again was always a big honor and a thrill. We've had some knockdown, drag-out matches through the years, all types of matches, some Falls Count Anywhere, Texas Death, cage matches, you name it. And that particular night was no different. It was a great honor to be in the ring with him and seeing a former ECW star, C.W. Anderson, a longtime friend of mine I've known for a while, and Lodi, another former WCW star itself, so. It was a great time, and it was great seeing all the fans in Kinston, North Carolina, and, of course, great seeing you, Dr. John, and for being there. Thank you so much for being there.
You're welcome. Now, I'm going to correct you. You were talking about being in the ring with the Barbarian. You guys were hardly ever in the ring. You were slamming each other all over that entire building. It was great.
It's always a rodeo ride with him. You just hang on to the bull and see where he takes you.
That's right. Well, all I got to say is you were in the ring when it started and when it ended, and that was about it. But the crowd loved it, and it was great. It was just great being up there, meeting some of your friends and family. It was wonderful. Now, the first person I want to say hello to is one of our favorite authors, Dave Atwell. How are you doing today?
I am doing fantastic. Just drove back from Lumberton, North Carolina. It's about 2.5 hours from home. And dare I say, that little 2.5 hour stretch, my best advice is have a full stomach, a full tank, and an empty bladder, because there is nowhere to stop at all.
And watch out for those crazy Indians.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. It is something else. I mean, as soon as you leave Lumberton, it just goes trees. And
it goes to nothing.
There's deer on that road. It's a great
Blue
place to, if you got kids with you, play your roadkill bingo. You know what I mean? So that way they could got something to do in the back seat while you're driving.
Definitely
find
a different type of Indian up there, man, than the tribe I'm from.
Funny thing is, though, run into Sean Cruz. I'm in the Walmart yesterday, and been friends with him on Facebook for like a year now, but never actually met him. Funny how social media works. But we walk right by one another, and I happened, you know, we glanced at each other at the same time, and we just stopped and had one of those dude moments. So it was great shaking hands with him. He had said he actually wrestled the Barbarian's nephew or son, I believe he said.
Yeah, Afi.
Oh, the same night.
Yeah. Sure enough. Yeah, they had a great match.
Yeah, that's what he
was
saying.
They really did.
And, yeah, they really threw down. So, no, it was great meeting him. And he's a good guy. He's another, you know, kind of brings your faith back in people, you know, when you talk to him, because he's got nothing but heart, you know.
Oh, absolutely. He always did.
Well, that's great. That was a great meeting in a Walmart, wasn't it, Dave?
Yeah, I won't tell you why I was in there, but
that's okay. We'll let that one pass by. And
yes,
you know,
whatever
funny,
needed when you're
I was
on the road.
Say real quick. I was going to say real quick. It's funny you mentioned Lumberton. That's like one of my former alma maters. You know, I went to Pembroke State for a little while for a transfer to Iowa. So,
well, that's right.
Lumberton. Yeah, Lumberton always holds a special place in my heart.
I'll tell you what.
Well, I like Pembroke. It's a good school. It really is. So yeah, that's great. So Dave, tell us what's going on in your literary life. That's what we want to know about. What's going on with the Hunger series these days?
Well, a lot really. Going through the reboot and everything with the old new publisher and everything. We are working our way over to a big re-release on the Amazon side of things. So trying to clean up any type of amateur, if you will, mistakes that I made in the first two books, and just getting a better clean up on it, if you will. And, you know, every day you get better at your craft, and if you don't, then it's time to go find something else to do. So, you know, I go around, and after reviewing, for the sake of polishing the fourth book off, notice a few errors and everything, both literary and grammatical and everything. So I'm getting that cleaned up. We're going to have a big re-release on Amazon. And then, like I was telling you in the last show, come Easter, we'll have that fourth book out. And hopefully never touch the ground again after that.
Well, that's great. And then as soon as you give me the word, we're going to have some kind of a release party for you either in Jacksonville or Wilmington. So that'll be a lot of fun. You're in Jacksonville, aren't you?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, well, we're going to have some Comic-Con stars going to do something for you. That'll be a great evening. And you can sign
absolutely
some books.
And I appreciate the offer.
Yeah, we wouldn't have it any other way. Papa Stro, you're going to be first on the guest list, okay?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'd be honored. I mean, Dave's awesome. He's my brother from another mother, man. He's awesome. I wouldn't miss him for the world.
Yeah, no, Dave's great. Ever since I met you up at Cape Carteret at the Comic-Con right before Cape Fear Halloween, it was a lot of fun. It was great. It was great to meet you. Now, Dave and Papa Stro, our guest tonight is a good buddy of mine, Alan Braswell. He's from down in kind of the middle of Georgia, and he and I share a real love for conspiracy theories, don't we, Alan?
Yes, we do.
That's exactly right. We met at Heroes Con last year. We haven't stopped talking since about things like that. So, yeah, it's great having you on here tonight, and we're going to talk about couple things. First of all, you're a little bit of an expert on World War II and Nazis, and there's a lot of stuff about the Nazis and Argentina and Antarctica. I mean, you gave me a list, and I want to just kind of go down, and Papa Stro and Dave, I just want to invite you guys to jump in whenever you got a question or a comment here, because this is really interesting to me. A lot of people think that the whole Third Reich died in Berlin. But, Alan, that may not be the case, might it?
No, most of them got away.
Most of them got away. Let's go down the list. Hermann Göring, tell us about him, and what do you know about his end?
Oh, the man in the tutu. That was the rumor that he used to wear tutus. I don't know about that, but that's what I've heard. A lot of people have said that he was a weird guy, which that whole bunch of the upper echelon Nazis were some of the most dysfunctional people I think God ever put on the face of the earth. But Goering was head of the Luftwaffe, which is the German Air Force. And him being so smart, he actually hung around after the fall of Berlin because he thought he was going to become chancellor if he hung around. So he ended up hanging around, and, of course, in the Nuremberg trials, they put him on trial and sentenced him to hang, and then he ends up the night before taking a cyanide capsule and killing himself.
Wow. So he was probably the only one.
Yeah, if he hadn't been so cocky, he could have got away.
So he was he probably the only one of that of this group that actually had found his end in Berlin?
Now, Heinrich Himmler, I think
he's on your list.
Him, and I think he was being interrogated in Berlin, and right in front of British officers, he took a cyanide capsule and died right there. So I believe they were still in Berlin at the time that the British troops had him and were interrogating him. So he might have died in Berlin also. Him and Goering died in Berlin. But really, that's of the people on the list, that's probably the only two that really did.
All right, let's jump to Adolf Eichmann. Tell us about him and what happened to him.
Oh, he was living it up in Argentina. And the Israelis got together and they decided to go get him, and they went down to Argentina and snatched him and put him in, blindfolded him, put a bag over his head, put him in a car, transported him back to Israel, and put him on trial for war crimes and hung him.
Wow.
So he actually did get away. They know that because the Israelis went and kidnapped him out of Argentina. They were the only ones that had the guts to do it. Even though everybody else knew, including the FBI, including the Russians, they all knew that there were other high-ranking Nazis down there, but the Israelis were the only ones that really had the guts to go down there and actually kidnap him. And, of course, it was a covert mission because going down there because of Juan Perón being such a Nazi lover and him being president, they did not want to start an international incident by doing that. So basically, if you wanted to get one of them out, that's how you had to do it covertly.
Other than Eva Braun, if you ever made her mad enough, I guess.
it's old lady.
Yeah, what happened to Eva Braun, Alan?
Nobody knows. Nobody knows. I mean, I've never really read anything. Now, the body that they found burned to death, the Russians, that was supposedly Eva Braun and Hitler's, now they tested the bones and said the bones come from a female. So, but whether they tied that back to Eva Braun, I don't know. I don't think they ever said. I've never heard that they tied it back to her or not, but it was definitely not Hitler's bones because the skull that they've actually got with a bullet hole in it, which she died of cyanide, according to all public reports. She died of cyanide. She took cyanide capsules, and Hitler took cyanide and shot himself with his sidearm. So the Russians had the piece of skull, and they ended up letting the Americans get a piece of that skull, and it did not come back as any relation to Adolf Hitler.
Well, you know, those guys throughout history in any type of person of power, be it royalty or, you know, conquerors or whatever, they always had body doubles.
Absolutely. And that was
that's what they were trying to do in the French Revolution. They were trying to sneak the royalty out, dressed up like peasants, and they were going to have the servants actually take the blade in their behalf, you know, die for your king type thing. And they just didn't have time to get out. So, I mean, it's always a possibility that they, you know, and when you say Eva Braun, yeah, that could have been anybody in there. You know, they could have body double. It could have been a servant. It could have been a prisoner. You know, it could have been anyone.
Yeah, I mean, they showed a picture of the Russian soldiers, even though I don't know, I've never figured out how they got this picture of a perfectly normal body, but yet they said it was charred a bit. But they have Russian soldiers around this body that's supposed to be Hitler, and I swear it looks like Groucho Marx. It doesn't look anything like Adolf Hitler.
Kind of like they did the Alamo when they got captured and the Mexican commander disguised himself as like one of the regulars to kind of blend in.
Well, I'm currently reading a book about Jack Kirby, the great comic book artist, right now. Yeah. And he was talking about his time in World War II, and he said there were plenty of our German soldiers would dress up as Americans just to get fed. They would get in the chow line with the Americans. So, yeah, they were not above dressing up as American soldiers.
Wow.
Yeah, talking about body doubles, there's a really interesting thing that I noticed several years back, and we're going to plow into this sometime in the next couple weeks. But that was Anna Nicole Smith, who passed away apparently of a drug overdose in the East Indies. And it turns out when you look at the pictures of the lady that was supposed to be Anna Nicole Smith, it just the jawline and everything did not match the pictures of Anna Nicole Smith that we knew. And a lot of strange things have happened with that. I'm putting some facts together, and we're going to talk about that here in a couple of weeks. But Anna Nicole Smith is another one that might very well have had a body double, and who knows what happened. That was
makes you wonder what the Undertaker was up to.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well,
you
know, when you pass away outside of the United States, it is not always the case that you get a good coroner's report. You just don't. And you got a good point there, Stro.
It was known that Saddam Hussein's sons both had doubles, and I saw a program where one of them was talking about how he got into being a double. He was basically forced to be a double. So a lot of these body doubles, it wasn't because they wanted to do it; it was because they were forced to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this guy, he definitely did not want anything to do with it, but, I mean, when your family is threatened and all this, then you tend to do it, especially with a dictator.
You're going to do what you have to stay alive.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, and to throw another rock in that pond, going back to the Hitler thing, is – and here's another big what if. And, you know, truth be told, that's what keeps any conspiracy theory alive, is the what if factor. I mean, as long as things keep being found, conspiracies continue to sprout leaves. It's when the facts are found and it's laid to rest is when it's no longer a conspiracy. But nevertheless, what if it had been the Americans that had gotten to the Eagle's Nest prior to the Russians? Because let's face it, when it come down to sophistication and protocol and that kind of stuff, you know, we're head and shoulders above the world. I mean, we're training other countries on combat. So, you know, you got the Russian army gets in there. Hey, who, you know, those guys might have gone in there and you ever hear the term clay hands? If you talk to somebody in sports and you say he's got clay hands, in other words, he can't catch anything. He breaks everything he gets his hand on. I mean, you got to think the Russian army probably was not into forensics, was not into details. They were just into winning and going, mm-hmm. Hey, comrade, let's have a vodka. And, you know, if the Americans had gotten there first, what type of – I mean, you see the way that they handled it when they came across the concentration camps. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, right. Patton, Eisenhower, all those guys. I mean, they actually went into the towns and got the mayors and his wife and the bakers and the blacksmiths and everybody and said, hey, how can this be happening
right,
two blocks from you guys? And you're not doing anything about it. So I'll tell you what, you know.
The most horrific thing I've ever seen in my life. Most
right.
tapes
and
concentration camps. Unbelievable.
Yeah. One of the a story about the concentration camps, the first one they found, Eisenhower, MacArthur, and Patton went to that concentration camp. And MacArthur actually broke down and started crying. Well, it was just opposite for Patton. Old Blood and Guts got mad. They said he was thoroughly peed off. And he left that place mad. I was telling John the story of when he came across the Rhine River. He stopped and he held up the tanks, the whole convoy. And they were, and Patton was in the front Jeep, and people were asking, what is he stopping for? Well, he got up on top of the bridge, and he urinated off the bridge. And they said, what's he doing that for? And Patton told them, I'm marking my territory.
That guy was awesome.
I mean, that typified the man because he was actually told to hold up on the Wolf's Lair, Hitler's
mm-hmm.
headquarters, because the Russians, they got to the bunker first, but
right.
Patton actually got to the Wolf's Lair first, but he was told by Eisenhower to pull back and let Montgomery from the UK take it. Well, he
mm-hmm.
said, I'm not letting this SOB, I'm not stopping long enough to let him come and get it. We're getting it. So when Montgomery came, the Patton army was already drinking the wine and already drunk. Sitting on the steps.
What a great story.
Oh, yeah.
Really. All right, now... All right, so we are in, I guess our next one, Alan, is Martin Bormann. Tell us about him.
Oh, yeah. He was a Hitler secretary, high-ranking officer. I mean, he was a personal confidant of Hitler's. He handled the money. He was the money man. And the money man got loose. He got down to Argentina also.
Mm-hmm.
Germany claimed they found his skull during the war and claimed it was his. Well, it wasn't, because in 1975 they said, okay, we've got the actual skull. Well, it had red clay on it. Nowhere,
mm-hmm.
iron-rich red clay. Nowhere in Germany is there iron-rich red clay. Well,
wow.
They finally found... He adopted a daughter in Argentina, and she told the name that he went by, but she said, yes, he was Martin Bormann. And they asked where he was buried. They showed him where they were buried. They took a core sample, and it was red clay, and there was red clay on this skull. In 1975, the Germans released it and said, okay, this is his skull. We matched up the dental records and everything. But it had the red clay on it. So it did not. They did not dig that up in Germany. They dug that up in South America.
Huh.
And there's numerous FBI reports that placed Martin Borman there. And so, of course, wherever Martin Borman was, Hitler was probably close by because he had the money.
Mm. All right. Now, I heard tales that Hitler was in Ecuador. Alan, what do you say to that?
Well, down there in South America, they went to Paraguay. They went all over the place because they were still on the run because of Eichmann being caught. And then Joseph Mengele, they finally found his bones down there. And so after Eichmann, the sources that I've read about and the documentaries I've seen, they said that really put them on edge when Eichmann got caught. So, and Klaus Barbie, the butcher of Lyon, he got caught. And so they went from country to country down there. They went from Brazil, they went to Ecuador, they went to Peru, they were just Uruguay, they were Argentina, they were all over the place because they were still being hunted, and they knew they were still being hunted.
Wow. Back down there at that time, it was like the wild, wild west. You could just cross the borders and nobody knew.
Absolutely, absolutely. It was easy to do, and really that's not a heavily populated area down in there, especially in the jungle regions where they found most of the compounds and stuff. That Colonial Dignidad is down there, just heavily fortified in the middle of nowhere. You had to know where you were going to get there. And so they were in the middle of nowhere, and, yeah, they would cross borders by just going through the jungles, and they would just change countries just by doing that.
Huh.
Easy to get away down there. Not very many paper trails. Kind of a third world country down in there, so the law enforcement wasn't really top notch. And plus, I mean, they were loved in South America, so it was easy for them to escape because they were helped out by so many people. Juan Perón loved Nazis. He admired Nazis. So when you got the president of a country looking, you know, when he's got your back, then you pretty much safe unless somebody pulls an Eichmann on you and snatches you up off the street and puts you in the back of a car and hauls you off to be killed.
It's good reading.
But they didn't call it a rat line for nothing. I mean, it was a real rat line. They were scurrying too.
But you know, anybody who's hitting a lick on success always has a contingency plan, whether it be evil success or good success. You always have a plan B if you're worth your weight in salt. These guys who, and I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're, Attila the Hun or, you know, Kublai Khan or, you know, Hitler or anybody else. A good example is even, you know, the president of the United States, be it good, bad, or in between. We've got stuff set up all over the United States to put that guy if something goes down. When 9/11 happened, you know, 9/11 happened, everybody, you know, the liberal ideal says, oh, well, George Bush hid. No, he didn't hide. He was protected, and that's what we're supposed to do to any president in something like that. So why wouldn't somebody as maniacal as Hitler was have the same things in place? Not only that, but during World War II, Spain was pulling the Eddie Haskell. Hey, we're not in it. And as soon as Mrs. Cleaver turns her back, he's being a knucklehead. You know what I mean? So Spain was closet buddies with the Nazis. And what's South America? South America is Spanish. So, yeah. You know, who's to say that Hitler behind the scenes was feeding Spain funds or whatever? And in the meantime, they were down there prepping things up, because you always got to have a plan B. And why not? You lose this thing. Because, I mean, and another thing, you got to wonder, because Germany was actually winning. Germany was actually getting it done. And then we showed up. And when that happened, that was that turned the tide. So who's to say that?
That and Hitler's bad decision of attacking Russia when he did.
Exactly, trying to push it through the winter, yep.
That Russian winter really, really put the brakes on them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but Spain, yes, that was a port city. They have, FBI files have been released that they did use Spain as a port city for U-boats going out, leaving with high-ranking
Nazis.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So they do know Spain did help them out. They used that as a port to send U-boats in there and get people out. Yeah, so you're right about that.
Yeah, and
so, you know,
about
don't think for 1 second that Hitler did not have some type of plan, one of those, you know, case emergency break glass kind of plans, and he had people lined up. And quite possibly he had body doubles in there lined up saying, okay, if all hell breaks loose, you're taking a bullet for the Fuhrer. And
absolutely.
And to be honest with you, those guys back in the day, you know, the part of American history we don't talk much about is that there was a lot of Americans that were German immigrants that went back to Europe during World War II and fought for Germany, the motherland. So, you know, who's to say that, as fanatical as it was, that there wasn't somebody out there, there's got to be at least one, who stands up and says, right on, Adolf, I got your back, man. Something blows up, I'll put the bullet in my head, we're going to create the Fourth Reich, and I'll be sitting on a cloud watching you, or roasting in hell, either one, but, you know, we're going to be here, you know, we're going to do it for the greater cause. And he was too crafty. He was too crazy.
Yeah.
And the crazy ones are the one you got to look out for. Because take, for instance, like that the knucklehead who shot up the movie theater doing the Joker thing. It's not even worth remembering his name. Nevertheless, this guy, you know, they said, oh, well, you know, we're going to try him on reason. And, you know, he's going to, you know, getting off on reason of insanity. The guy wasn't insane. He was a genius. This guy, you know, knew how to strike. He booby-trapped his apartment. He booby-trapped the apartment by putting the trigger on a remote-control car, you know, knowing that some kid would play with it, and kaboom, everything would go, you know. So even knuckleheads like that have the ability to lay these plans out. Why wouldn't somebody on a global knucklehead scale like Hitler be able to do the same thing?
Right. Well, you know, the old saying, there's a fine line between insanity and genius.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, you know, you got that division right there, that halfway point to where, okay, I'm crazy enough to do this, but I'm smart enough to do it the right way.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely.
That's a good point, Alan. That's a very good point. All right, and I got a break in here with a quick question with Papa Stroh. I'm gonna play our game one more time. You wrestled every town I have ever asked you for. Have you ever wrestled in South America?
I believe I did a tour there a while back. Yeah, it was like right after my tour in Mexico with AAA.
I am never gonna find a place that you have not wrestled, am I?
It's been a crazy ride.
He's wrestled in Cordova, North Carolina. So I said, did you ever wrestle in Cordova? He said, you mean where you can barely get the ring into the garage of the fire department? And I started laughing. I said, you've been there too. So yeah, that's great. I'm sorry, I had to break in. Yes, you still got a perfect 100 on that. Oh, Alan, I got one.
Speaking of wrestling in Germany, I met Baron von Raschke one time.
Oh, and, yeah, Baron. He's great, man.
Yeah. He was about as German as I am. I believe he was a South Georgia redneck.
Yeah.
Those cauliflower ears.
But he had the claw. Didn't want to mess with the claw before Black Jack Mulligan had it. Yeah, he had it.
Yep.
And didn't want nothing to do with that claw.
He was.
Yep.
His hand was scary and he was. The claw hand.
Yeah, we had a wrestling event at our high school, and we were there for an FFA meeting after school. We were cooking a deer, and the wrestler started coming in, and he pulls up, and he comes straight over to us with, instead of that German accent he spoke with, he's like, "Hey, fellas, you know where the gym is?" It's like, "Hey, he talks like us. He's not German." So that was kind of a buzzkill, but he'd probably watch shows on Germany, but I doubt he'd ever even been there, probably.
Well, you know, the same goes for Ivan Koloff, and just a word of throwing out good vibes his way. I mean, he's a class gentleman, great guy, and just want to wish him all the best with the challenges he's got lying ahead. But I remember when I was a kid watching him fight. And matter of fact, when we were at Cape Fear Con, the Halloween show, and I went over there to his table, got to talking to him, and I says, "When I was about 10, 11 years old, I saw you fight the Iron Sheik with that chain, and y'all tore one another apart." And, you know, here's a guy who used to get on TV, you know, and go, "You know, everybody hate Koloff, you know, and I'm terrified of this guy as a kid." And now here he is with me, and he's asking me about how my books are going and everything, and I'm like, wow, if I could just jump in the time machine and go back. But, yeah,
those
nothing but good thoughts and prayers going in his direction because he is a fantastic gentleman, and I'm glad I've been able to speak with him and everything, get to see him again, because he is nothing but class.
Yeah, he sure is a great guy, and we wish him the best.
Yeah, he's a legend.
He really is. Yeah, Pop Strode told me that he was not doing well, but we're all going to pull for him and keep him in our prayers because he's just a fine gentleman. And we had him on the show, had a wonderful talk with him, Pop Strode. It was great. And thank you for being. That's the first time you co-hosted with me on Comic-Con Stars. It was just great. So yeah, we'll certainly send out all the good wishes that we can for Ivan Koloff. And Alan, I guess I got one more name on this list before I've got one. Erwin Rommel. That was a heck of a story, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. That's matter of fact, I was just they had a show on a couple of nights ago about that very thing. He basically, the British intercepted a message from Rommel where he actually wanted to kill Hitler. That got back to Hitler, and because of national pride, and he didn't want people thinking, okay, I've got my war hero general here turning against me, he sent a couple of guys to Rommel and told him, look, you either commit suicide or you're going to go on trial. And if you go on trial, then your family's at risk. So he took the cyanide capsule. But they held this big, and he had even stated he did not want any kind of Nazi paraphernalia, anything in his funeral. But, of course, they had the swastikas all over. They gave him a grand funeral. He was this great general. But, yeah, he was basically killed. I mean, the Desert Fox was basically ordered to be killed by Hitler.
Well, they were nice to him to give him the opportunity to take his life. They really were,
yeah,
because that could have been a disaster for his family and for him. It really could have.
Oh, yeah.
So,
that's the only reason he took his own life is because the other choice was going to involve his family, because they did not want it, because they didn't want to lower the morale of the German people, because everybody admired Rommel, including Montgomery. The British general. So, I mean, he got beat by Rommel in North Africa, in Libya. And, you know, he admired him, and a lot of other people admired him. Patton said he didn't. I mean, Patton didn't think there was anybody better than him, and there really wasn't. He just, he was cocksure about everything. He was a man's man, and he was like, "No, I'm the best, and nobody's going to beat me." And that's basically why he was demoted near the end of World War II. After he got through with Germany, he said, "Well, we might as well march into Russia, because we're going to have to deal with them sooner or later." And he was actually taking his division into Russia, and President Truman had this like, "Whoa, you." Eisenhower to demote him, because they basically took his command away, because he was commanding his going into Russia.
Yeah, and speaking on conspiracy theories, let me go ahead and stretch another one. Because of Patton, I have a hard time believing that he just got into a car accident. I mean, it was a car accident, but
yeah,
I'm telling you, somebody got under there, and there was a lot of monkey business going on.
Yeah, it was a very low-speed car accident. It shouldn't have caused that much damage to him.
Uh-huh.
I mean, even Patton himself said, "No, do not do anything to the guy. It was a total accident." I mean, it was just a 2-ton truck, and it was two guys in the Army driving it, and they just happened to, and it was basically low speed. It was like 15 miles an hour, just they bumped, basically, and he could have never died from that. Brad Belcher, on his show Decoded, he actually did a show on that. And sent a team over into Paris, I think, where he died, and he's buried currently. He wanted to be buried with his men. So, but they actually went over there and interviewed some of the doctors and all this. And, I mean, they really still, to this day, don't know. Bill O'Reilly, as a matter of fact, he wrote a book, Killing Patton. And I'm currently reading that. And yeah, that's a whole show in itself right there, because it definitely wasn't on the up and up.
I guess what I can say is that Patton became a liability.
Yeah,
when you become
a
liability.
Yeah, Papa Stroh, we were talking about a little bit on Saturday night about occasionally a wrestler has become a liability. Maybe we'll talk about that one a little bit later. But that does happen around big business, you know.
I think it happens with everything on occasion. There's always going to be somebody that needs to be. Given a dose of reality, you might say.
Right. If you guys wouldn't mind, I was in the I was in the grocery store. We no longer have the Weekly World News, which was my favorite publication ever with Bat Boy. But we have the National Examiner now, and on the front page was James Dean didn't die in the car crash. Now, James Dean was a very
–
But you know what? Now, Dave, you laugh, but I bought this. I spent $4.99 plus tax to buy this, and I'm glad I did. Let me tell you what it said. as someone that's becoming a student of conspiracy theories, James Dean was apparently in a car with a member of the Luftwaffe, a buddy of his that somehow, you know, this is 1955, and they were in a car wreck. And apparently he was not in bad shape. His face had terrible, terrible scarring on it and had gotten in the windshield. And what this story says, and it's very interesting, it talks about how there had been a car wreck and a young boy had gotten killed a couple of hours beforehand. And word got back to Warner Brothers. Now, at this point in 1955, Warner Brothers, who produced most of the major films and distributed them in the United States or in France, all over the world, Warner Brothers was about as powerful as one could be on the internet today. And so the story goes is that they did the body switch, and mm-hmm. James Dean was – the autopsy was performed on this soldier who had gotten killed 4 hours earlier, and that Warner Brothers had to keep James Dean on ice because they had just filmed the two films that were going to be his biggest, Giant starring Elizabeth Taylor and Rebel Without a Cause starring Natalie Wood. And James Dean's career was skyrocketing, so they couldn't have an injured, ugly James Dean. And you know that, you know, it's not the most far-fetched thing in the world. Stro, you know, we were talking about how sometimes a wrestler can become a liability and something may happen to them. Well, you know, mm-hmm. big business can have their hand in something. Money does talk, and I hate to say it. You know, most business people, of course, are ethical and pretty honest. But there are times when someone like Warner Brothers might have – they said that James Dean lived until 1962 in a bungalow in Northern California. Mm-hmm. I might believe that. I mean, it's not too far-fetched. It's very reasonable. It's just as reasonable as the fact that we're now hearing that Paul McCartney did die in a car wreck in 1964 and was replaced by a member of another band. And the fact is that a copy of the newspaper, the local newspaper, has been found, and it talked about Paul McCartney dying in a car wreck, and there's a picture of his car. That was a big conspiracy theory back when I was a kid, but it might be true. The James Dean thing might be true. So I think what we need to do is we need to, if we're interested in conspiracy theories, if you want to be a student of conspiracy theories, look at the facts and go do some investigation. Now, Alan, one thing that I asked you about, and I think it's very important about the Nazi regime, is we started hearing a little bit about the Nazis and Antarctica. What's going on down there? What in the heck is going down in the frozen South?
Well, the Russians actually dug. They were doing some research up there, and they actually dug down to like 100 feet, and they actually found a golden swastika up under there. That this was just recently, an expedition. They wasn't doing any research on Nazis. They just happened to find this thing. But yeah, they think the Nazis were setting up bases. And I've read stuff all the way to they were basically the same thing they were doing in Argentina. They found warehouses where they were creating chemicals. They had developed mm-hmm. sarin gas. They were doing nuclear experiments. I mean, they were building the Fourth Reich.
It makes you wonder, you know, about the story with Captain America about the Red Skull and Hydra and all that. You know, if it wasn't far fetched from actually being the truth, you know, with
a
situation like that.
Right. I've seen stuff that says, okay, they were building bases, and all the way to they had scientific labs inside mountains where they were actually going to clone Hitler. They were going to use his DNA to clone him. So
that's heavy.
It runs a gambit. You know, it's just according to what you want to believe. I mean, mm-hmm. the information's out there. It's just, okay, who do we believe? But, yeah, they were messing around down there. They were creating bases and all this, but nobody really knows exactly. Like I said, you can find one report that says they were doing scientific experiments. Some say they were just building bunkers to hide. It was just another safe place for Hitler to go. And then some that goes all the way to the point of cloning Hitler. So there was definitely something going on. But, you know, the Nazis, they went everywhere. I mean, they were religious fanatics. Oh, yeah. Indiana Jones and the Temple, Indiana Jones
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh, you're
right.
Dark, yeah.
Hitler had his own archaeologist, and he had him looking for these, the Holy Grail and the Spear of Death. The spear that was actually stuck in the side of Christ, which they think does exist. I know one church over in it's kind of like the Shroud of Turin. You know, they're not sure if it's the spear, but they think it's the spear, and it's a holy relic. But I mean, Hitler was looking for all these items because he believed in the occult and religion and things like that, and he thought these items would bring him good luck or bring him some kind of divine power. So he was looking for the Spear of Destiny, and he was looking for the Holy Grail, and among other things. I mean, that's a fact, that he was looking for, because he did have his own archaeologist out looking for all this stuff.
You know, this is all fascinating. We're all extremely interested in major personalities who have done some unusual things, and it's interesting. It's something that I don't think will ever die, and it's just been great talking to the three of you tonight about these conspiracy theories. We've covered not the Nazis. We've talked about Argentina, South America, Antarctica. We talked about James Dean. Talked about a couple of other things, and a little bit about Anna Nicole Smith. Now, Papa Stroh, I want to round up with you. You've got something big coming out in the theaters really soon, I hope, don't you?
If referring to Checkpoint, absolutely.
Yes, sir.
It's out in the theaters now, and it's going across the country, and it'll be making its premiere in Wilmington, North Carolina, really soon. So I'll definitely, if you hear about info before I do, of course, vice versa, I'll let you know for sure. And it's going to be in Netflix, too, in March. And Checkpoint, speaking of conspiracies, it's a conspiracy in itself, because it presents the possibility of the military waging war against the government, because the only for the government's for the people anymore, and it's hard to tell. It's almost like dealing with homegrown terrorism within the country, and it's hard to tell who the good guys and the bad guys are. And so the movie itself presents a whole conspiracy with its own right. So it's definitely one of those movies that makes you think. It's a great action military film. Goldberg's in it, William Forsythe, Fred Williamson, Kenny Johnson from The Shield, Sons of Anarchy, who does a tremendous job playing a veteran struggling with PTSD, and Mindy Robinson's all-star cast. So I definitely want to check out Checkpoint when it comes to your area.
Right, we're going to have a big deal as soon as the thing premieres in Wilmington. We're gonna get as many people as we can to go to see Checkpoint, take you there as our featured guest, and then we're going to have an after-party interviews with you at Grace on 2nd down in downtown Wilmington. Now, Alan, I know you're probably 5 hours, 6 hours from there. You and your family are welcome to come. But, Dave Atwell, I hope you'll be there when we have the big Papa Stroh premiere party for Checkpoint in Wilmington. Does that sound good?
Oh, absolutely. That'll be fantastic.
Right. We're going to get a crowd. We're really proud of our co-host and our great friend Papa Stroh being in Checkpoint. This is a major deal. We're so proud. I'm proud of all three of you my good friends, Papa Stroh, great wrestler, Dave Atwell, a great author, and Alan Braswell, a great expert on conspiracy theories and other interesting things. So all I got to say is I want to thank all three of you so much for being on Comic-Con Stars tonight, where we hauled out Conspiracy Theories 101 for the whole show. We'll have another great show next week. I've got some folks I'm getting lined up. It'll be great. Papa Stroh, can you join me next week?
I'll absolutely be an honor.
Good. Well, I'll be announcing that soon. So, look, I wanted to thank every one of you for being here. It's been a lot of fun. Everybody, just tell your friends to listen to us on VOC Nation. And also, remember, we are on WLSC AM 1240 in Loris. You can listen to that online and everything. We broadcast at 9 p.m. on Monday night, Banana Jack Murphy Station, WLSC Loris. And we're proud to be part of the VOC Nation and proud to have all three of you great guests here. This is Dr. John signing off and saying thank you, and we'll catch you next week on Comic-Con Stars. Thanks, folks.
Hey, good evening, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thanks, Papa Stroh.
Thank you.
Alan, you have a good one.
Y'all too.